Hey folks, welcome to the Hang Your Own Hang podcast, a monthly podcast about hammocks, hammock camping, and everything related. Our goal is to enlighten you if you're a ground dweller and to entertain you if you're already a tree dweller. I'm Jonathan Kupal, and this is my co-host, Mark Baldwin.
Evening, Jonathan.
How's it going, Mark?
Pretty good, can't complain.
Seems like we're always recording this in the evening.
I guess just the way it happens.
Having jobs?
Yes, and families.
It's crazy. For our listeners, we're recording in the first real winter storm in Buffalo of 2016, and it's been great to finally see the snow on the ground. I'm getting sick of dirt and trees with no leaves. The white trees are always awesome.
Although I'm sure people have seen on the news about the frozen car that was along Lake Erie.
We get bad press.
Yes.
So this week we have a special guest. This was one that you had actually discovered in some of your own online research trying to get yourself prepped. We have Kyle Baker from Ripstop by the Roll. Kyle, good evening.
Jonathan, Mark, how you guys doing?
Good.
Yeah, we're doing great. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So a quick bio. Kyle, you grew up just generally being outdoors, doing a lot of camping with your family, and then started hammock camping only a few years ago in 2010. You, like us, as you're a relative newcomer to hammock camping. It looks like you've got a background in engineering.
Yeah, actually, I guess in a former life, before I became a fabric and materials nerd, I was an actual nerd. So, I have a degree from Mississippi State University.
That's great. And then it looks like in 2014, I actually did a Wayback Machine and looked at your original website from 2014, your first Ripstop by the Roll website, and you've definitely come a long way with that. That it looks a lot better now. So your website is ripstopbytheroll.com, and you specialize in fabrics, especially Ripstop for the DIY market, for the outdoors DIY market. As a side note, it looks like there's another manufacturer out there, Ryan Baker from Appalachian Hammocks. Is there any relation there?
Yeah, so that is actually my little brother.
Okay.
And incidentally, the reason that I'm probably standing here talking to you, because he's the one, you know, like you said, we were always outdoors when I was growing up, going to the lake, different lakes around North Carolina and whatnot, going with my parents, not hammock camping, but just being outdoors and camping. But didn't get into hammock camping until maybe around like 2011, 2012, mm-hmm. something like that. And it was actually my brother, who's 12 years younger than I am. I'm 30 now, and so this was when I was like 25, 26, and he was, you know, whatever,
wow.
13 years old. And I came home one Christmas and, just sitting in front of a sewing machine, sewing away, making underquilts, stuff sacks, hammocks, all types of stuff. And that's kind of where this whole thing began.
That's pretty cool. Hey, I've got a question for you while we're on the background and such. Mark, and I don't know if you've noticed this or not too, but
yes.
There seems to be a big hammock camping community in North Carolina and in the Carolinas. Is that just a perception thing, or where's that coming from?
No, I mean, I feel like there is. You know, we have the smoke butt hang that happens here. I think there's some other, that's the only one that I've been to in North Carolina. I know that there's ones out in the western part of the state. Gunner 76 is a big part of the community in North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably seen him posting a lot on the forums, sponsors the hang. I believe he does the Hunger Hang. You know, just in general, I guess I am friends with several people, a number of people in North Carolina, Virginia, and South Carolina. South Carolina more through Palmetto State Hangers, which is their association. But I think it's strong and growing for sure.
Good. Now, what made you want to get into actually starting a mail order company for all the fabrics and all?
Well, you know, I mean, really it was just a solution to a problem that I had myself. My brother and I, just to go back to how everything started, I came home one winter for Christmas break, and he was making all this stuff, and he was actually making some hammocks and just simple basic hammocks and stuff stacks and whatnot, making orders to spec for people on a different forum, a smaller forum, not a hammock-specific forum, but he was just kind of making them as a hobby, and I came home and one Christmas, and we just started talking about it, and he wasn't really making any money or anything like that, but we got to talking about maybe making a little business out of it, and that's what we ended up doing. And one thing led to another. And basically, like I said, it was a solution to a problem that I had myself, because when I looked out and started, I handled a lot of the business side of things, at least to start with, because I didn't have a lot of experience sewing. But, I looked out and saw that there weren't really a lot of places selling the stuff that you really need to make a hammock. There were a couple places that sold stuff that you could use for hammock, mm-hmm. but not necessarily what is ideal. So that was one thing, just the specific, the selection of what was out there and, the lack of selection, I should say, for hammock specific fabrics. And not only hammocks, but hammocks, tarps, quilts, and things like that. Not only the selection, but in, weights and things like that, but colors, didn't see, that was a problem. But the biggest problem I saw was, not being able to purchase in small quantities, and still get a good price, So that's really where Ripstop by the Roll started. It was, first quality fabric at wholesale prices with no order minimum. Really what I was trying to do there is, offer the best fabrics at better prices so people could DIY, and also start a small business on a budget.
Cool. Good. Now, how long did it take from you when you just actually got everything up and running to where you said, this is going to be a full-time thing for me. I'll be able to, actually start my own business here and, maybe make a living and help some people out.
Well, let's see. I would say that, I was sitting at my desk one day, and I'm probably about 5 or 6 months in, and I got out a sheet of paper, and I started listing out all, my expenses versus this little, line by line, listing out my expenses versus how much money the business was bringing in. And how much profit I was making. And, I would say probably around 5 to 6 months in, that's where it started. I knew the business was going, well, and we were fortunate to be, experiencing some success. But I guess that was the first time that I actually sat down and said, this could actually be something that I leave what I'm currently doing and what my current career path is to do full time. So yeah, I would say maybe about 5 to 6 months in. Looking back, I'm actually glad that I went through that exercise and said, hey, this could work. The numbers seem like they might make sense. I'm glad that I didn't do it then, because I think I was probably, looking back in hindsight, a little naive about, maybe a little overzealous, and then also naive about how much money it was going to take to beyond subsistence level, what I have to pay the bills. What we have to have beyond that just to grow the business, into what I wanted it to be. So I'm glad I didn't jump ship right there.
Once you started getting a little bit bigger and, you decide this is going to be a full-time thing for me, how hard was it to be able to get your suppliers to source all your materials? You're buying in bigger bulks, having to pay for an inventory. Was it hard for them to even sell to you in the beginning?
Well, I mean, the business model has always been trying to do everything that we can in production lots and spec runs. So what I mean by that is, by not being a distributor, there are several distributors that you can get materials from, and some of those materials are not hammock specific, but they're things that you can use as hammocks. But the business model was to spec out our own
volume production run so that we can get that price down for the DIYer and the small business owner. Now, the exact process of, I'll stop short of laying out a roadmap of exactly how, you know, we got into sourcing everything. Mm-hmm. But, you know, what I can tell you is that it was a lot of work. it takes a long time to find and then also vet a source for a material takes a good while. And, you know, if you ask me to lay out how I did it, I would say it's a combination of research, face-to-face meetings and some cases, a lot of phone calls, but probably, I mean, above everything else, it's persistence. That's probably the best thing. That's the foundation of it all. And really, that's the foundation of success in most businesses, is just sticking at it until you find the answer that you're looking for.
What made you want to just stick with, you know, just the fabrics and all?
Well, I think that maybe, I don't know. It just appeals to me. You know, just from a product viability standpoint, I would say that, you know, there was and still is a need for pushing the envelope on fabrics and materials. And, I guess I've always thought that there's something to be said for specialization. And, I think that if you really want to push something and want to be great at it, and, it needs to be what you do, and fabrics and materials are what we do. So I think that there's, like I said, a need for it. And, I hope that we're providing a good product for the community. And I think that there's a lot of room to run with what can be done, in terms of technology. And another big thing for me has always been kind of bringing what the big boys use down to the DIYer. You know what I mean? So we were the first ones to do diamond ripstop. You know what I mean? For a hammock. Mm-hmm. Before that, that just didn't exist. You know, that wasn't a thing. And you saw it on, you know, bigger brands like the Kamek and whatnot. But I looked out and I said, well, why can't the DIYer have that? You know, why can't a smaller cottage vendor have that? And that has kind of been one thing that has driven how I approach fabric and material development, how I've approached it in the 2 years that we've been in business. And that's just one example, but there's several that I could throw out there that we've already done, and several that we will do in the future. So,
Yeah, your specialization and your, I guess your mission is really to that whole concept of supplying any quantity at the wholesale pricing, so to speak. I've got to imagine there's some special challenges servicing a DIY community that the wholesalers really don't have to deal with.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we come out of hammock forms, you know, that's where we got our start. And it was a great thing for us, because it's a great thing for any business to come out of a forum like that, because it's free advertising, right? You know, one of the biggest things when you're trying to start a business is, how do you reach customers? You could have the best product in the world, but if you can't get it in front of the right people, then what do you have? You don't have much, you know what I mean? Because a lot of the success of a business rides on how you can get your product out and how you can execute, how well you can execute. So, the getting the product out part of that equation was helped immensely by the forums and people. It just provides a platform to showcase what you're doing. And there's a willing group of people that are willing to listen, and they want your stuff if it's good enough. So yeah. But to get back to your question, it definitely has its challenges.
I imagine.
You know, I guess I want to start with the good. My point was to start with the good and then come back on not the bad, but you know, you asked me what the challenges are. So I'll just be honest. I mean, there are some challenges. Expectations, I would say, would be one. You know, expectations on availability, time, et cetera. Mm-hmm. You know, when you come out of it, when you start small and come out of a community like Hammock Forums, you know, when you're making the, when you first start out, you know, you're raring to go. And not like I'm not raring to go right now. I love my job. I love coming into work every day. But, you know, when you first start out, you're really raring to talk to anybody that'll listen, right? And you have these conversations through the forum, and you're making posts and you're responding to posts, and people are responding to your posts, and you're like, man, this is great. Like, you know, this is awesome. People mm-hmm. are liking my stuff. I'm going to build a business. And then, you know, you fast forward 2 years later or 4 years later, your business has grown, you know, by X factor. And you're, I think just a lot of times maybe people don't, and it's not a fault on the members of the forum. It's just, that maybe they don't completely realize how many different directions you're pulled in once the business gets to scale. And maybe the expectations haven't shifted from, you know, when you first started, still looking for that personal interaction. You know, people, I think, are still looking for that personal interaction that they saw on day one. Now they're looking for that same level on, you know, year two or year four. And that can be challenging sometimes. You know, just the number of, you take the number of emails that I answer on any given day, and then you compound that with, you know, private messages and things like that, or somebody asking something about an order through a private message. It's, you know, when you first start out, that's okay. But when you're year two and three and you're there's so many more demands on you, that can be a challenge. But that's not to say that, members, that we have a problem with members. Members are great. We love talking to you. Everything's cool.
Okay. So as you've grown, have you seen a lot more attention from, say, people who aren't necessarily DIYers, but maybe are the next step up, like other cottage suppliers who are seeing you as a viable source for their own materials because, say, they're not manufacturing to the same kind of capacity that Kamek is, or they're doing more customization stuff. Are you seeing that, or are you really not supplying to that part of the industry, you know, even though it's a cottage industry?
We are working with, yeah, the answer is yes, I am seeing that. And we are working with not only small businesses, but we work with small, medium, and in some cases larger size businesses. And, you know, this doesn't get publicized, obviously, on the forums. But, no, we work with businesses that are most of the time have a need for a fabric, or, you know, they have an idea of what they want, but they're not necessarily, they don't necessarily know exactly how to get it or what it is. They just kind of have this framework of what they would like. And they come to us, and we exercise our black book, so to speak, and network of production around the world to make that a reality for them. So the answer is yes, we are doing that for, a number of different businesses. And, man, it's great. Like, that you can go to the wholesale page on our website and kind of read some stuff there. Maybe, I don't know if it's there or not, but it's definitely in like a follow-up email where I kind of go into a spiel about, you know, I think verbatim, you know, one of the things that I do and love the most is working with other businesses on fabric and material sourcing. And man, that's not just marketing, Deke. That's not just me trying to sell you a yard of fabric. That is how I actually feel. I love talking to other business owners and other people that are hungry to start a business. And you know, I don't want to make this into entrepreneur hour or anything like that, but, you know, I really am passionate about entrepreneurship, and I love people that are hungry, to use, starting a business and entrepreneurship as a way to change the direction that they're going on in their life. So I love working with other businesses. That's for sure.
That's really cool.
All right. So getting down to the nuts and bolts of it, I'm on your website here. And if somebody is new, they want to just, you know, they started getting into hammocking and now they want to start getting to DIY stuff. How about some of the technical terms of all the different fabrics and all? You know, I see calendar fabric, Hyper-D, no-see-um, Cuban fiber. Yeah. I mean, if somebody was, you know, didn't get into reading and even going through the posts on the hammock forums and stuff, it could be a little overwhelming and not even know. I mean, somebody wouldn't even know where to start. How about just a brief overview of some of the major ones?
Sure. You know, when I first started, I didn't know a lot about fabrics and materials, and I've just built up that knowledge over time. And I can totally sympathize with somebody coming onto the site and seeing all these fabric terms and just kind of being taken aback by all the terms that there are. So I guess what I'd like to do to maybe hit some of the high points is put it in the context of specific projects. So if you're coming out of hammock forms, you know, the big three are going to be hammock, tarp, and quilt. So if we start with a hammock, I've tried to, if you are on the site, and I'm going to go on the site right now as we do this, I've tried to organize the fabrics in terms of what they would be used for. So for a hammock, what you're going to want to look at is breathable and uncalendered. So, you know, just to give you step by step, if you're on the site and under fabrics, there is a category for breathable and uncalendered. So really what you're looking for there in a hammock, a material, is breathability, right? You don't want to sweat in the hammock, and you want it to be comfortable. So look at breathable and uncalendered. So to put some substance to the terms that are being used there, breathable is pretty self-explanatory. It just means that if you sweat, it's the moisture vapor is going to go through it and escape, so that you don't wake up in a pool of a sweat after a night. And then uncalendered. So I get that question a lot. So there are two types of, you can see if you're on the site, uncalendered and calendared. So basically calendaring is done to, it's a step in the finishing process for fabrics, and it's done to make materials downproof. So basically you run the fabric through heavy heated rollers, and it seals up the weave, flattens the fabric, and it makes it downproof so that the down doesn't poke out, or a down like synthetic like Primaloft doesn't escape. So that's not the best material for a hammock, because it reduces the breathability, and it kind of makes it look like, if you've seen a calendar material, one side will be matte and the other side will be shiny, right? And just aesthetically, if you use a calendared fabric for a hammock, it kind of makes it look like a trash bag. So if you want to avoid that, I would stick with uncalendared. And overall, it's just going to be a more comfortable fabric for the hammock. Now, past that, once you get zeroed in on breathable and uncalendared, you have, you know, weights. So you see we have everything from 1.0, and that's ounces per square yard. I guess that's a good term to throw out too. So every weight that we reference is in ounces per square yard, so aerial density of the fabric. And the general trade-off there is that as you go up in weight, the durability increases. So it's harder to puncture, harder to tear, higher weight rating, something that people are always asking, what's the weight rating for the hammock material. So you have your choice from 1.0 all the way up to 2.2 in our Hex 70 XL. So another one pertinent to hammocks would be the XL. So XL, everything that we label as XL is extra wide. So if you're looking for an extra wide hammock, if that you're a bigger guy or you just like the way that a wider hammock lays, you'll want to look at the XL fabrics. So beyond that, a couple different terms. You mentioned HyperD. That is our brand of diamond ripstop nylon. So it's just like any other brand. It's our branded line of diamond ripstop nylon. Just so that you know where it's coming from. You know, it came from us. Polyester versus nylon. Those breakdowns are really comes down to stretch for a hammock. Polyester is not going to stretch as much. So if you want a firmer lay, you would want to look at the polyester. Polyester is also a little bit better on UV. It won't fade as much over time. The only drawback to polyester is that it's not as strong as nylon. So that's one thing that you do want to watch out for. So yeah, that's pretty much covered it for hammocks. So now let's move on to the quilt. You're starting to look for materials, and you don't understand exactly what the trade-offs are and what's the best thing for your, or the best fabric or material for your particular project. At the top of the decision-making tree, you have to decide whether you need a calendared or an uncalendared fabric. So if you're making if you're making a down quilt, it has to be a calendared fabric. You have to use a calendared fabric. Remember when we talked about calendaring, how that works is that you're running the fabric through heavy heated rollers and sealing up the weave, basically making the tiny holes in the fabric as small as possible. So it makes sense that to prevent down from escaping after you make your bag, it has to be calendared. So all downproof fabrics are calendared. Not all calendared fabrics are downproof. So keep that in mind. You'll want to reference on some of the product pages our IDFL test ratings for downproofness and things like that to assess the trade-offs between different choices if you're making a down quilt. So the other side of that is if you're making a synthetic quilt. So by in the strict sense, you do not need a calendared fabric for a synthetic quilt. It can be uncalendared. I always recommend a calendared fabric just because most of the time they feel better. And it's going to make the quilt a little bit warmer because, remember, you're sealing up the weave and you're going to increase the wind resistance of the fabric. So there'll be less wind penetrating through your quilt and it's going to make a little bit warmer. So I always recommend a calendared fabric, but you don't strictly have to get one. So if you're breaking it down, once you figure out whether you're going to go with calendared or uncalendared, you have choices that are really, in terms of fabric, really just a trade-off between weight and durability. So at the lightweight, or I would say ultralight end of the spectrum, you have something like our membrane 10 nylon taffeta. So that is a 10 denier. And I guess I could talk about denier real quick. Denier is really just the weight in grams of 9,000 feet of the base yarn that's used to weave the fabric. So all you really need to know is that as the denier goes down, the weight's going to go down for the fabric. As the denier goes up, you know, 40 denier, 70 denier, the finished weight of the fabric in ounces per square yard is going to go up. So back to the UL end of the spectrum for a quilt, you have the nylon taffeta at 10 denier at 0.66 ounces per square yard. So if you're going to something like that, that is for your ultralighter. You're willing to take a little bit more care of your gear and you accept that going in because you're getting the lightest weight in product that you can achieve. At the other end of the spectrum, you have something like our calendared 1.1 ounce ripstop nylon, a little bit more economical price point, but it's heavier. Right. So the other trade off there is durability, like I said. So the 1.1, as you go up in weight, the general rule of thumb is that the durability is going to increase. So only other thing I can think of for a quilt is a ripstop versus taffeta. I typically recommend taffeta for the inner on any quilt just because it is softer. So ripstop does increase the strength and specifically the abrasion resistance. So I do recommend most of the time recommend a ripstop outer shell. But for the inner shell, where feel and having it be buttery soft is really important because that's what's going to be touching your skin, I recommend a taffeta because it is, as a plain weave, non-ripstop fabric, it's softer. So then lastly, we have the tarp, right? You're looking to make your own tarp. Where do you start? So just like we focused in on breathable uncalendared, for the hammock, you'll want to look at lightweight coated non-breathable fabrics for making your own tarp. So lightweight coated just means it's been coated with either silicone or polyurethane. Then non-breathable means that it is waterproof. So obviously you want a waterproof fabric when you're making your tarp. When I'm starting off with the discussion on different trade-offs and whatnot for a tarp fabric with a customer, I typically start with polyester versus nylon. So if you're from hammock forums, you've definitely seen chatter in the different threads about sil nylon versus sil poly. And the breakdown there, comparison, is pretty simple. Sil poly is lower stretch, meaning that it doesn't stretch. So it's not like Cuban fiber in that it doesn't have any bias stretch. It does. The thing is that it doesn't stretch as much when it's wet. So what that translates to is you not having to retighten and retension your tarp after a night of rain or a period of high humidity. The other pro for sil poly is that it's polyester inherently is more UV resistant than nylon, so it's not going to fade as quickly over time. Now the flip side of that is that it's weaker than sil nylon. Sil nylon is stronger in tensile strength, tear strength, and puncture resistance. So it's also been around for 30 years. So it's tried and true, battle tested. And that's really the breakdown between sil nylon and sil poly. But the stretch is a big thing, and that's why a lot of people are moving to the sil poly. So from there, you look at the different options that you have once you've settled down on sil nylon versus sil poly. It's really a trade between weight, durability and waterproofness. So if you just have to decide what is best for you, right? So if you want to go ultralight, then you want to look at something like our membrane sole poly. And the only thing that I try to stress with people, whether it be for a tarp or a quilt or a hammock, anything really, is that as you go down in weight, the durability decreases. So if you're going to go ultralight, that's great, that's fine, but you do need to realize, I would be doing you a huge disservice if I didn't tell you that, you know, lighter weight means more fragile, you know what I mean? So it's just, you have to go into it knowing that you're going to have to take a little bit more care of your gear if you want to achieve the lightest weight. And if you're willing to do that, then by all means, ultralight is great. So you have everything from the lightest weight membrane sole poly all the way up to something that's a little more robust, like our 1.6 ounce sole poly. So if you don't care as much about, you know, you're not going on a 3 week section hike where weight is really critical, and you just want something that you can throw around and whatnot, go with something that is heavier because it's going to be better at abrasion resistance, puncture resistance, tear strength, all that good stuff. So something like our 1.6 ounce sole poly. And then of course you have some variants in between the membrane sole poly and then something like the 1.6 ounce sole poly, such as our 1.1 ounce stuff. So that's kind of an option that would give you a little bit of lighter weight, but also not lighter weight, but still a little bit stronger. So a good compromise. Lastly, you have waterproofness. So you might see that we have designations for, you see PU4000. Like, what does that mean? Well, PU4000, it really just means that one side of the fabric has been coated with polyurethane. And what that allows us to do is get a better waterproof rating at the start and then over time. So it really just comes down to weight versus waterproofness. If you want something, if you want a fabric that waterproofing today, tomorrow, and it being waterproof today, tomorrow, and 3 years from now is really important to you, and you're willing to accept a little bit higher weight, then go for the PU4000 fabrics. On the flip side, if you are going hardcore ultralight and you just want, you know, the bare minimum, just enough, not to say the bare minimum, but it's not as important in your project to have that huge waterproof rating, then you'll want to steer away from the PU4000 fabrics and look at just the Sil nylons or the Sil poly, so silicone coated both sides. So yeah, it just really comes down to weight, durability, and waterproofness when you're selecting a tarp fabric. And if you ever have any questions about that, I mean, I'd be glad to discuss more. So yeah, I think that's a pretty good rundown of different terms and options and whatnot. I know we didn't cover everything, but I don't want to keep rambling for too much longer. One thing I did think about is that I think I said 9,000 feet in relation to denier. It's actually 9,000 meters. So denier is the weight in grams of 9,000 meters of a particular yarn.
Good. And then you were talking about ripstops earlier. What about the different styles, the square, the diamond, the hex?
So traditionally, ripstop nylon, ripstop polyester has been a box or square grid pattern, so the checkerboard standard pattern. But now we have diamond, diamond hybrid, hexagon, those are the ones that we carry. There's a lot of other ones too, man. I mean, there's really no end to what you can design. You just have to think it up, and then it's pretty much possible to weave a lot of different patterns. So in terms of performance and functionality, I really think that the biggest one is that the diamond and the diamond hybrid can reduce the stretch, particularly for lighter weight, load bearing applications such as a hammock. Doesn't really matter in a tarp that much. I don't think there is a huge difference in abrasion resistance between the different ripstop grids. So, you know, that would be applicable to like a quilt, something that's rubbing up against you a lot. I don't think that there's that much difference between ripstop grid A and ripstop grid B. It's mainly the reduction in stretch for lighter, like I said, lighter weight and ultralight hammocks. I think that's the biggest one. Outside of that, I really think that it just comes down to what you visually and aesthetically, what you like the looks of. Do you like the more traditional box grid or diamond, hexagon, octagon, you know, whatever the case may be. It just comes down to looks and visual appeal, because, you know, people are designing different products and whatnot in there. Well, they could either be designing a product and they want a specific striking or visual effect, I should say. And then for the DIYer, it's just kind of what you like the looks of, what you think is cool. So, yeah, that's basically it.
All right.
Now, you know, everything you could ever want to know about ripstop fabric and ripstop grids.
Well, I think it's, you know, it's a big part of it because, you know, outside of not or learning how to use a sewing machine for a lot of the DIY hammock stuff, the biggest scary part of for somebody is what to purchase.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not only that, but you look at my first purchasing opportunity would be to go to, you know, a local hobby store like Joann Fabrics or maybe Walmart. Yeah. And suddenly, you know, they might have one or two ripstops and maybe one or two colors if I'm lucky. And then suddenly I, you know, I check out your website and I'm just floored with how many choices. It's Baskin Robbins for the DIY hammock camper. And sometimes it's a little overwhelming.
Yeah, and we're working on that. I am working on that. I've tried to, you know, going back to how many different directions you get pulled in. Man, I just couldn't even tell you on a given day. It's just so much stuff that happened that, but anyway, don't get off on that tangent. How busy I am. Any vendor on the forum, that's not just me. That's any vendor on the forums could go on for days about, you know, how many different directions they're pulled in and how busy they are.
But that's a good thing though.
Yeah, it is. No, it's always a good, you know, we're doing some things to shuffle, pieces around and free up, more of my time because, man, I really love sewing. I really like making videos and teaching other people how to do this stuff and providing not only videos and instruction, but, you know, providing some guidance like you're hinting at, you know, just as a first time DIYer, you get to the site and it's like, wow, they got everything, but I have no clue which one to pick. You know what I mean? So, I'm trying to carve out some time to make that process a little easier.
Yeah. Part of it is just taking that time that you take to do it in a personal way and move it into the website, I would imagine, so that it's still useful, but not as much one-on-one.
Yeah. I mean, in an ideal world, I would speak to each and every customer on the phone before they make a purchase because, man, when somebody calls in and I actually talk to them, maybe after saying this, I'm going to get like a flood of phone calls, but I really do feel like after I talk to somebody, they know exactly what they're getting and that they feel confident in which fabric they're picking for which application because, you know, just like we're sitting here talking about everything, the trade-offs, and I can break that down for them and help them to understand what the trade-offs are between different products that we have.
Now, actually, how you were saying on your website, on it, you've got the projects page, and, you know, actually, I've got a lot of cool stuff here. And you do have the materials list. Is one of your things you're going to be trying to expand on how to make stuff, the instructions and all?
Definitely. I think that our first 2 years has been, man, a little bit of a whirlwind of product additions. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, I'm proud of what we've been able to do. But, you know, I think sometimes, like we were saying, you can only do so much. You know, there's only so many things you can do in a day or a year. And I think that in our first 2 years, we've just been in this, this tear of, and this is, you know, my direction. I have all these things that I want to, products that I want to bring on, and that's kind of what we've done. But I think there's a whole other side to offering, bringing value to the DIYer, and that is information, sharing the right information, in a clear and concise way. And, you know, it's not just offering the best products, it's showing people what to do with those products, you know what I mean? And yes, the answer to your question is yes, I want to do a lot more of that in 2016. Actually, I'm staring at my machine right now. I just moved it over into our new office. It was over at my house, not collecting dust, but not in the best location. So now it's over here and co-located with all our goodies. So we're hoping to do some more videos and stuff.
Now, I love the idea of the your $10 DIY box. I mean, that looks like a great way for somebody to get their feet wet and using a sewing machine, working with fabrics and all. How'd that come about?
Well, that, yeah, I mean, you said it right there. That was the idea behind the $10 DIY box. It was just to put together a simple, a easy project for people to do as the first project to get their feet wet, right? So we include a couple different fabrics so you can get not only complete your first, you know, gear sack or stuff sack, but also get a feel for the different types of fabrics. And now we're rotating those every so often. So, you know, if you want, you can come back and buy another one, or you can buy one for a friend that you think might be interested. Just a great way to see some of the different fabrics, because we give you, you know, a breathable, like a hammock fabric, and then we might give you a coated fabric. We always give you an uncoated and a coated. And so you can see, you know, silk nylon. What does silk nylon feel like? Okay, well, now you know, and it's only cost you $10. And just like I said way back at the start of the interview, the first thing that I ever did was a stuff sack. Anybody calls in and has questions about, or you don't have to call in, I'll go on record and say, if you don't think that you can do, don't think that you can sew, you can do a stuff sack. I promise you, with some work and, persistence, you can do a stuff sack. And that's what I started with. That was my very first DIY project. So I thought that would be a good thing to do for the $10 DIY box.
That sounds good.
Yeah, just as a side note, the stuff sack, that's exactly what my son's first, you know, my 10-year-old son going into Cub Scouts or Boy Scouts, that was his first DIY project too. He you know, chopped up the piece of a, you know, just some scrap nylon and made a couple stuff sacks for himself. And he figured out suddenly that it was real easy.
Yeah, it doesn't even matter that it's a sack. You know, when you get right down to it and strip everything away, you really only built it as a bag. But when it's your first project, man, and you built it with, you started from a sheet of material, some cord, and a little plastic piece, and you come out on the other side with something that you can actually use, I mean, dude, that's great. So,
all right, so I guess maybe an interesting question. If there was one thing that you would want to tell anybody who you sold your product to or was about to start a DIY project, the one thing they should know before they start their next project or their first project, you know, you've got a lot more experience talking to DIYers and hearing about their the laments of their mistakes and such. What would that one thing be?
I would say that if you were contemplating getting into DIY, maybe if you just zero in on one thing, I would have to tell them that it's not as hard as you think, you know. Sewing is not as hard as you think. And I can tell you that, and I can be confident in telling you that, because I used to think that, you know what I mean? And I was 25 years old and never sewn anything. And I came home and my 13-year-old brother was doing it, you know what I'm saying? So that was kind of an eye-opener, right? You know, if you can do it, I kind of felt like at that point, if you can do it, I can do it. And then...
Right, you got an engineering degree.
yeah, but you don't need any. I promise you. Yeah, but yeah, I would say that it's not as hard as you think, and that you can really dive in head first and make some awesome stuff without being any type of expert level skilled sewer. You don't really need any knowledge coming in. I think as you should like tinkering. You should like working with your hands, and you know, the idea of starting with a pile of material and coming out on the other side with something that you can use, a piece of gear that you can actually take out into the field, appeals to you, then you're going to get a lot out of it. I would also say, I know you just said one thing, but I'll say other thing I would not focus on is getting into it strictly to save money. I would not get into DIY just to save money. You know, I can go into, for as far as the rationale, I guess, and the logic behind it, I can go into, you know, oh, you have to account for your time and how many hours did you spend on it versus, you know, whatever, you know, how much do you value your time at? But man, DIY is about, because what I've already said, I mean, it's about starting with a pile of material and then making something. It's a labor of love. I know it's a cliche, but that is. I mean, you starting with nothing and making something you can be proud of. And I think that's the way that you should approach it. You know, don't go into it thinking just solely about, yeah, you might save a couple bucks, but I wouldn't go into it making that your primary motivation. So that's my first.
Yeah, I know one thing I do is I'll prototype stuff first using either scrap or throwaway fabric or whatever. I'm sure a lot of our listeners have tents that they no longer use that have plenty of scrap nylon available.
Yeah, there you go. Cut it down. Cut it up. Get it out of there.
Get it out of there. Get in the hammock again.
Good way to recycle it.
Yeah. And we have a bunch of seconds, you know. We've never sold a yard of seconds on the site. And that's for a reason. But we should have like a yard sale or something at some point and just sell off seconds for what you're talking about, you know.
That's a great idea. I mean
most of the stuff is not even, it's not like it's functionally bad. I mean, you could, if your prototype ends up being something good, and it's great, or you know, if you just want to buy seconds and make a piece of gear out of it, it's, most of it's functionally good. It might have aesthetic problems with it, but yeah, maybe we should do that.
Neat.
That's cool. All right, well, Kyle, we like to always ask one off topic question each week. What would be your favorite place to go camping and why?
Favorite place to go camping? Well, you know, I mentioned earlier that I grew up in North Carolina going camping with my parents and stuff at lakes around North Carolina. Carr Lake, Lake Hickory, Jordan Lake, Lake Gaston, things like that. So, you know, I guess those are the memories that are, they're ingrained in my mind. I love being around the water. I like being on the water too. So if I had to choose a location to camp, it would probably be somewhere around a lake of some sort or somebody. But that being said, I just did my first overnight on the day. We talked about that a couple of weeks back. That's one of the reasons we had to put off the phone call.
Mm-hmm.
But, I like that as well. Lake or anything like that. Man, that was a really cool hike, by the way. The Grayson Highlands State Park. Okay. Did an overnight with my girlfriend, yeah. And man, it was cold. But you guys live in Buffalo, so like I can't even go down this like cold bit because I was too cold. But I think that was a lot to do with not being prepared for it. I didn't have the proper, yeah, I mean, it got down to 8 and
okay.
I had like 30 degree gear. So I think that was the problem there. Yeah, I could have made that better with better gear experience. But
did you use a hot water bottle or anything to stay a little warmer?
We had some of those stickies, you know what I mean? Little hotties, little things you like stick on your, only my feet were cold, like not so much anything else, but you get some of those little stick on thermal reaction, you know, pad heater things.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah, it was a great hike, and I would highly recommend that route, school, 10-mile route, but yeah, it was great.
Yeah, what about you, Mark? What's your favorite place to go camping?
I just like getting out. One of the places, you know, just that we used to go when I was in Scouts years ago was, which I think the AT goes right through it, the Delaware Water Gap area, right close to the Pennsylvania, New Jersey border. We used to go there with my Boy Scout troop all the time. That was always a great time. And then, just basically really anywhere, you know, I don't really have any favorite place. How about you, John?
You know, it's interesting. I have the same visceral response. I miss the camping experience I had when I was a kid, being up in Buffalo. I miss the Adirondacks. I grew up in central New York and it was a real easy and real short drive to get out there. And I miss that. So that's kind of interesting. We all kind of had the same response. You know, we want to go back to the experiences that we had when we were kids, I think.
Yeah.
I'm glad I didn't grow up in the desert. I don't think I'd have the same feeling about that. But I'll bet you there's people who grew up in the desert who would love it.
Yeah.
Well, Kyle, I do want to say how grateful we are that you took the time to talk to us. I acknowledge how busy you are as a small business owner. You can see the level of response you have to your customers as they're coming on, you know, through forums or direct. So thank you for kind of slicing out a chunk of time to talk to us, tell us a little bit about yourself, and help us learn a little bit more about doing DIY.
Yeah, man, no problem. Again, thank you guys for putting this on. I know it's a lot of work. I know this is only half of it. You guys got a lot of work on the back end, putting editing and putting everything together. So just thank you for what you're doing. You're doing something unique, worthwhile. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Right. Thanks, Kyle.
So, Mark, we've been talking a lot about doing DIY stuff, and this episode kind of feels like a DIY episode. I know one of the kind of the things that's really neat is being able to kind of DIY our own equipment. I assume you've done some of that yourself. You mentioned it before.
Yeah, a little bit. Not so much in the hammock stuff, more in just general backpacking, whether it's the stoves or stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Done any recent projects?
Not really, just with usual family stuff.
Yeah, kind of same here. I just decided to do a quick DIY backpack as an experiment, see what I could get done with my my thread injector, and that was kind of a fun project. I think a lot of people start having some successes with DIY and then decide to kind of make a go of it with something that's a little bit more financially motivated, either to share it with people or to try to make some money.
Right, yeah, and I know it's a big thing with a little intimidating each, even buying the stuff. Mm-hmm. Buying all the materials, and if you're inexperienced, the sewing machine or thread injector, you know, you don't want to spend all that money and something not work out right or cut it wrong or something like that. So.
Yeah, a lot of people, though, have kind of progressed from doing it DIY to actually being vendors in the cottage industry. And a good example is the guys from Jack's Are Better were real early on. They were a couple of guys that went from making some of their own underquilts, which was a new and really creative thing, to becoming cottage vendors.
Right.
One of the things that seems like has gotten more popular recently is that some vendors and some individuals will actually take an idea and bring it to Kickstarter. That seems to be kind of the common way now to try bringing a product to market. What do you think of that?
If it's something, you know, if you've got something new, I think it's something a little different.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a great idea to see what kind of interest is actually out there for it. But at the same time, you know, I know we've talked in the past about that, whether it's, you know, is it just trying to get money or is it how it actually works and all?
Yeah, and I kind of feel the same way. I looked at it. There's a couple of things. I've actually got some numbers here. Just doing a quick query on Hammock on Kickstarter.com. There are 58 of them labeled as Hammock. Now, a couple of those are not actually related to what we do, like hammock camping. There's some foot hammocks and there's a couple of cool cat hammocks, which I guess is somewhat related, but
yeah,
not hammock camping.
Yeah, although I mean, if I guess if you could say small dog, maybe, because I know even on the boards I've seen people asking about backpacking and hammock camping with their pets. I don't
yeah.
see many people going out with their cats. But
yeah, cats aren't really that social.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think they like it out in the woods. Although they might, but then never come back.
Yeah. It seems like about 60% of the Kickstarters actually fail. I guess that's a good thing in the sense that people aren't bringing something to market that nobody wants.
Right.
There are some really cool ones that have started up recently, the Trio, if you remember seeing that, which is really neat.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a couple years ago, there was a hammock pack. There's another one called the Hacked Pack, which is like a backpack that has a hammock built into where normally the pad would be for a backpack. That was really neat.
Yeah, I did see that one on Kickstarter.
And I actually backed one myself, the Loop Alien, which I thought was really, really clever, and I actually used for my tarp tie-outs. I think it's kind of a shame to see the Loop Alien clones now from the Chinese manufacturers. That guy did a lot of work to bring something to market that was really good quality.
Yeah, I saw those ones, the cheap ones. I don't know I think it was on eBay, possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, my feeling on that is, you know what, somebody put in the effort to make it. I'm not going to go out and buy a knockoff when, you know, just because it's cheap. That guy, he really did do a good job. And you can get them, Loop Lines actually, you can get right from Ripstop by the Roll,
yep.
Interestingly enough. He added them into his stock. The one that I think recently that I have a little bit of mixed feelings about is the Apex Tarp that was just released on Kickstarter.
Yes.
What's your feelings on that? I mean, it's just a tarp.
Yeah, that one, I know I'm on this sort of on the same page on that, because if I'm right, that wasn't their first Kickstarter, correct?
Well, it's definitely not their first product. I would definitely right. agree with that. I'm not sure if it was their first Kickstarter.
And so it's somebody that's sort of already established, and then it could be a great product. I've never seen one before, mm-hmm. So I'm not going to knock the product or anything. You know, it's something that's... There wasn't anything, if I'm correct, there wasn't anything that was real innovative about it or anything.
Yeah, that's kind of how I felt too. I guess, and I saw a lot of comments in the forums and stuff that kind of related to the same thing, which was people were like, well, what's new and different about this? Is this just a way to take orders? And
right.
Maybe that's the distinction. Kickstarter, I think it's a really great way to figure out if you have a product that actually has a market.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just want to avoid buying your source material before you have orders, just do a pre-order on your own website and be done with it. I'm not sure if there's any real value in running a Kickstarter for that.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I'm still a little green on the whole Kickstarter thing. I've gone on. I've never actually backed any projects or anything on it. I mean, if it's something new that you're just trying to get out there, and like you said, why don't you just put it there? I guess it's just another way to get your product or your product name or anything out there.
Yeah.
And the thing is, I don't know, maybe it's good. I don't know if it's good for the industry. Maybe it is good because you're getting more people making the product more visible.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's something that somebody could be looking on for, I don't know, other backpacking gear or outdoor gear or something for their backyard, and they come across that and they see this hammock underneath a tarp, and now you've got somebody saying, hey, what's this? And then they start doing research on that and see, wow, there's a whole industry out there with, you know, all these other cottage industry people. And it's not, you know, hammock's not just something for lounge around in the backyard. People actually can, you know, spend weekends or, you know, go on long hiking trips using a hammock. So maybe, you know, maybe it's something like that getting more visible to the public, maybe a positive for everybody.
Okay. So I guess let's weigh in. Your opinion on Kickstarter projects, good idea, bad idea?
I don't know. I'm actually sort of on the fence. And actually, I was sort of thinking it was a bad idea, but now that I was just talking while I was not thinking, and I think I almost talked myself into it, that it could be a good idea, and just getting visibility out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and like I just said, you may see something, one product on Kickstarter, you think it's new, and you start doing research on it and realize, wow, it's really not new, and there is a whole industry out there of cottage vendors.
Yeah.
Or even, you know, the bigger, now it's becoming even more popular.
All right. So great marketing concept, and also a great way to bring something new to market. Cool.
Yeah, I would think so.
So we come to the part of the show where we tell our listeners who our special guest is going to be next month.
So who do we have coming up?
Well, I'm super excited to be able to say that we've got a really interesting hammock camper named Frankie. I'm sure many of our listeners have heard of him. He developed the Frankie-style bug net,
yep,
amongst other things. He's got some really fun videos that he's done of some of his camping experiences, doing some longer distance hiking and some hiking with his fiance, who's now his wife, I believe. And I'm really looking forward to having him on. Have you seen any of his videos or anything like that?
I'm pretty sure I've seen most of them, actually.
Okay.
I do a lot of YouTube watching, so I've seen probably all of Frankie's videos.
Well, if our listeners wanted to go check out his videos first, he'll seem like a close friend by the time we release our next podcast. Okay, Mark, one of the things that I need to do here now is we need to actually post a quick correction. In the syntax episode, I actually made the foolish mistake of generalizing the state of Utah as a barren desert, which was really a bad idea. It's not a barren desert with saguaro cactuses patterned around the ground. We actually had a couple of folks who had to the podcast who gave us some corrections. So Stephen on our website mentioned that he has troop hammock camp in Utah all the time. And then another great comment from Brad, who camps out in the high U.S. wilderness. So Brad, and hey, thank you very much for the corrections.
Well, that's the show this month. And as always, you can find us at www.hyohpodcast.com or on our Facebook page at HYOH Podcast. If you like what you hear, please give us a positive review on iTunes.
Absolutely. We have 3 reviews on our iTunes page right now. I'd love to see us maybe get a review from all 10 of our listeners. It would be really great for our egos. If you want to comment or have a question, please visit our Facebook page, or you can send me an email at jonathan@hyohpodcast.com.
And me at mark@hyohpodcast.com.
And of course, special thanks to you, Mark, for coming up with this awesome topic. And special thanks to Skid Von Ark for allowing us to use his music for our intro and our outro. And finally, to ITX for hosting this podcast. Thanks to all of our listeners for hanging around. Yeah, the tear in my pack slowly weighed some pounds. Opened my eyes, and what did I see? A man from Minnesota swinging tree to tree. A thin piece of fabric suspended in the air. Should I even try it? Or should you even dare? Had two straps and a couple of toggles. How this would even work, my mind began to boggle. Yeah.